Welcome back to another edition of the Division 3 podcast. My name is Josh Davey. We are here in the Inside Lacrosse Studios in Baltimore, Maryland, as always, with my man Dan Kaplan here in the studio and repping IL North, Kyle Devitt, up in the Shire. Excited to dive into some of these games. We've had some technical difficulties over the last few days, so we are very excited to be together. Shout out to Mike Gilbert, Tommy Lyons, Matt Kinnear, boots on the ground here in Baltimore, trying to get this going. So we have a little bit of a bootleg operation going on right now, but I think it's going to work. I think the audio is going to be fine. So, fellas, you guys, how you guys doing?
I'm excited, ready to do this thing. Let's get it going.
Yeah, I just want to say that none of the technical issues were my fault.
That's confirmed. None of it was Kyle's. Well,
I think people assume it's my fault.
Yeah, no, we do have a conspiracy here that when you called in, you were the reason that it all, like, broke that first time. So, I don't know that you're totally getting off scot-free here.
We're making it work. We're making it work, though. So, I'm also really excited to hear that Dan's voice sounds very normal so far. So, hopefully that's a sign of things to come.
Well, I got a pro insider tip that said to make sure that you only have one of the ears of your headpiece going so that you're not listening to yourself back. And it is drastically helping. So, shout out to that person.
All right. So let's dive in. There was a lot to kind of go over from this past weekend. We'll kind of recap what happened Saturday. We are recording this Wednesday morning. It'll come out Wednesday afternoon. So we'll talk about one Wednesday game that is tonight, and then we will dive into an awesome, awesome slate of Saturday games as the D3 schedule kind of continues to rock and roll here. So two games we're going to talk about right now. The first one we're talking about is Ursinus Stevenson. Just to set the table, Ursinus, reigning Centennial Conference champions, a team that was kind of like not really on the map for a handful of years for a while, and obviously everyone's more familiar with Stevenson, 2013 champs, have been a perennial kind of powerhouse in the Mid-Atlantic for a long time now. So, and again, to set the table, Ursinus last year kind of got back on the map by beating Stevenson in the 2019 season. So the final of this one, Ursinus 13, Stevenson 12. I am going to let Dan, why don't you kick us off a little bit of a recap for this one, how it went.
All right, so this game, like, I'm going to start with the last game of the last play of the game where Aaron Grill sneaks the right pipe and they find it. They score to win the game with 12 seconds. All right, but I'm going to set the table a little bit here and let you know. Ursinus has the ball with about 30 seconds left. They're running offense, tie game. They get a shot, and it's an awesome look from the left wing, and Pouse just eats it up. Clean save, throws a great outlet. They end up fail clearing, and then they foul on the fail clear and give Ursinus man up, and they score with 12 seconds left. And it's like, yeah, that's a great play. But Stevenson just ends up killing themselves with these penalties and, like, lack of discipline. It was a great game that otherwise, down to that last second, you just wish that they would have been able to be a little bit more disciplined and have it come down to something else to win the game.
That's kind of what to expect from Stevenson, though. They kind of play, like, freely, wild, up and down the field. They take chances. I mean, for as long as I can remember, those are the kind of penalties that have killed them, but also the plays they have made that have won them games and kind of got them to where they are now.
Yeah, Devitt, I know you watched this one. What did you think of it?
Yeah, I know I'm the ride guy, but I love Ursinus' ride. I mean, it won them the game at the end, just in the way that you described. Can't be overstated that good rides lead to easy goals. It's just one of the facts of lacrosse. I thought Ursinus' attack was very impressive. It's pretty clear they run almost everything through the guys down low, and teams are struggling. I know Stevenson struggled to stop it because those guys on the Ursinus attack are so good moving off ball. They're and not good in the way that, like, they're fast moving through and replacing, but they support each other out of the deck, right? So there's always someone to hit the relief pass to, and they do a really good job of keeping possession as a result. As you said, lots of men up here. At one point, it was in the first half, it was 6-on-3.
Yeah.
But somehow Ursinus didn't get a shot.
Yeah, they kill a 6-on-3 penalty. It's crazy.
And they did score when it went 6-on-4. So you're kind of forgiven there.
Yeah,
but
that's true.
I don't know about not putting a goal in when it's 6-on-3.
Right. Yeah.
The other part of what you were saying, though, like, I don't want to, like, leave Stevenson out here. They forced a turnover from Porzel, the goalie for Ursinus, who tried to, like, kind of hero ball a pass out at the 2-minute mark, and Stevenson blatantly just intercepted it and scored and tied the game.
Yeah,
Oh, it was rough.
Yeah, there
that was rough.
There were some bonehead plays both ways that left me, like, pulling my hair out, that's for sure. And then for Stevenson, Jacob Tatum was awesome. He looked really, really good. He's driving his defenders up to the island, and he's super two-handed. So once he gets there, he can just roll over either shoulder and let it fly. Like, he looked really, really good. He was definitely a bright point for that.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, at one point, I think I described it on Twitter as a one-handed no-look back-to-the-goal BTB on the crease.
Yes.
Which I don't even think does the shot justice.
Yeah.
I feel like the shot was even crazier than that because he was tripled, too.
Yeah, no, he got slid to and still pulls that out. It was awesome. It was impressive.
Yeah. I think, you know...
Go ahead.
No, I just think the thing with Stevenson is, like, they always try to make big plays. Like, they only take big swings, which, like, part of me is like, I love that. I love that kind of mentality of, like, I'm going to make this diagonal X pass through three guys.
100%, yeah. You know? If they were a boxer, they're like just out there throwing right and left hooks. They're never throwing a jab, just constantly throwing right and left hooks.
They're a haymaker team, but, like, maybe just dump the ball to X.
But they don't want to, you know, like, don't want to possess the ball either. They want to get up and down quick. They don't want to, like, if you can stop them in the first 25 seconds of the shot clock, I feel like their probably efficiency rate probably goes down a significant percentage in the last 25 to 30 seconds of the shot clock. They're not comfortable carrying the ball, working it around. They want to go and make a quick play, which I, you know, sounds like in this game kind of, you know, was a huge detriment for them.
Yeah. And then the last thing I mean,
it was a great game, too.
Like, it was a great game.
Sorry.
It was awesome.
I'll let you finish, but I think that it was very physical, tight, like back and forth scoring, lots of penalties, man ups, weird turnovers. I think it was a perfect debut for a D3 game. If you're just kind of like inching your way in, this was a great game to watch. I feel like we should have pumped it up more. I tried to do it on Twitter, but it was almost like too late because I was too into it.
Totally.
It's hard to like promote a game while you're in the moment, but I really enjoyed this one.
Yeah, it was really fun. And then, like I said, the last thing I want to say about it is I have to give my boy Noah France a shout-out. He was number 11 for your signings, the LSM, that just, like, gosh, his motor, it made me want to run through a brick wall just watching him. And they score on a play where he's on the wing and tracks down the Stevenson Fogo. He just tracks him down from behind, gets a back check, keeps it loose on, like, two or three more checks, and then a Stevenson defenseman ends up being first to the ball. He gets another one, keeps it loose, and then they end up scoring on a one-on-one on the backside of it because Hakan Atilisoy picks up a ground ball and finds Bobby McClure on the backside, wide open, nobody near him. And France is the only reason that that play happens, but he won't end up in the scoreboard at all or the box score at all for it, but he deserves so much credit for that goal, and it's a one-goal game, you know. So I had to give him a shout-out for that.
I love it. I love it. We love the shout outs here on the D3 podcast. Stevenson's schedule doesn't get any easier as they play York this coming Saturday, and we'll preview that as we get deeper into this podcast. The other game we want to dive a little bit more deep into is Lynchburg 19, FNM 10. This is a game I watched. Really cool experience being able to like pull up my ESPN app and watch this game on ESPN3. Joe Hutzler does an amazing job, the director of communications for Lynchburg College or University of Lynchburg. They do a really good job. And this game, you know, on this big, so to speak, stage on ESPN3, Lynchburg showed out. 19-10, FNM was never in this game. It was 5-0 really quick. I know the three of us all watched this a little bit. I watched the first half, and then it almost wasn't worth watching. The kind of things that were really notable to me was just Lynchburg's offense. They were so comfortable. You know, last week against Salisbury, they won 4 faceoffs. I think they were like 14 of 30 in this game, so much closer to that 50-50 rating, which we kind of identified as obviously a huge weak spot for them. But if they can battle 50-50, they can win these games because of how efficient they are and how great they are on defense. Noah Bedwell on the goal I thought was awesome, making a lot of saves, getting down on the ground to make some tough ones. You know, we talked about Luke Keating and Kevin Mollahan for FNM, and you know, Tyler Gallagher is that guy for Lynchburg on defense. You know, we were interested in who was going to guard, whether it was going to be Keating at attack or Mollahan. He started out on Mollahan. He ended up with 4 calls turnovers, really took those guys out of their groove. They ended up getting theirs, you know, as they scored 10 goals, you know, as a group. But Tyler Gallagher had a goal where he literally just stepped in from the restraining line and just let one fly. It really wasn't a contest. I was really impressed with the Lynchburg offense. Trammell Robinson had 7-1. Kevin Rogers, I think, had 4 or 5-2. Just up and down the field, you know, on defense, they're doubling the ball. They're just playing fast. Like, I know Coach Kudelka, and that is a Coach Kudelka dream game for them. They came out of the gates flying, you know, not a lot of mistakes on their end. I was really, really impressed, and I think it's just a sign of good things to come for the Hornets that if they can continue to make the faceoff a 50-50 game, that's all they need. It's 50% of the faceoff X, they can be in any game.
Totally agree. And Lynchburg on offense did look really great. You said they were comfortable, and that was 1,000% true. Part of why they were so comfortable is because of how bad the Franklin and Marshall team defense was, though. They just let them get to wherever they wanted on the field. And when they were sliding, they just weren't accounting for twos and threes. And their off-ball posture, they were just standing straight up and down. So when it was time to make a play or time to get into a position to help, they just weren't in any type of a physical state to be able to get there. It was hard to watch. It was awesome watching Lynchburg, you know, be so comfortable and so polished on offense. But how much of it was due to Franklin and Marshall's poor team defense? I don't know. We'll have to see.
How many times did Robinson get on a shorty and dodge and score? Four?
Right, yeah.
Five?
And the number of goals between that and just sneaking from X and being, like, essentially unaccounted for. Like, man, you can't just not account for somebody after you slide and not recover well, you know? Like, gosh, it was hard. It was hard watching that team defense.
Yeah, and, you know, we talked about Lynchburg last week against Salisbury. You know, getting a big win against a really good FNM team, I think it's a really confidence booster. And you know, they always have a really tough schedule. You know, they have Cabrini coming up this weekend. They're playing up in Philly, up in Radnor, so things are only getting harder for them as well. FNM, you know, we mentioned Ursinus. The Centennial Conference is such an amazing conference to be in, competitive every week. So things are going to get harder for them. You know, Dan, how do you see FNM moving forward this season? What are the things outside of team defense? What are some of the areas they need to really improve on?
Well, one of the things that I thought was really interesting, too, was in goal. I'm not sure what exactly is going on, but their starter from last year I thought was, you know, phenomenal. He's a transfer from Mount St. Mary's. He's big. He takes up a lot of the cage. He's quick and explosive. But he doesn't play at all in that game, and they played two different goalies. So I'm not sure if he's hurt or, you know, what's going on there. But getting him back would be a great first step.
Yeah. So we'll see how it goes. You know, 2 weeks into the season, still a lot of teams figuring out who they are, trying to, you know, figure out who their identity is. So let's move on to a couple other games. I think the way I want to structure this for these next four or five games here is I'm just going to say the teams and the score. And Kyle and Dan, you can each just give us like a sentence on kind of your summary of this game, a player to watch, a player that stood out. We'll just rattle through these real quick. So one game we previewed for this weekend, Denison, WNL. Dan, why don't you start?
All right, so I'm going to take the low-hanging fruit and talk about Peter Petrov, who has 7 goals in his debut, right? He was awesome. He was working really well above the goal. I think my expectation of him was that he was going to be more of like an ex-attackman that, you know, does a really good job of pushing the backside and making good decisions. But they used him above the goal, and he sweeps to his left hand really, really well. And from those spots, he's really dangerous. And when you're sliding to him, most of the time he's initiating on a pull, and you're sliding with a pull, which leaves, you know, two short sticks involved in the help defense on the backside and creating short dodges. So I thought he was really impressive. Kyle, I know you watched that game. What'd you think, too?
Yeah, I mean, I was going to say he finished with 4 goals and 3 assists, but I was going to say a 3-3 is a Peter Petrov hat trick, basically, because you know he's going to get the assists. You know, he's one of those rare players where you're like looking at the assist numbers first before the goals.
Yeah.
You know, and the goals just kind of like fell to him. I thought Washington Lee tried to shut him, and that's when they kind of moved him around. And they actually played 5-on-5 a little bit. But if you're looking at it from the perspective of WNL, and they're a team we've kind of talked about a little bit last week, I think their offense went into ISO mode here.
Yeah, and they're playing 100
guys. I think it hurt them a lot. It hurt them so much. I just you need to like cycle. I think they only cycled the ball like 6 times the entire game. It was catch and go, and it was like kind of like we're down, we got to score. We're down, we got to score. On the other side of that though, and I'm sorry, I just kind of like praised and then went right back to Denison. I love that offense. That like they just baited a lot of unnecessary slides. They did that 4-man rotation overload with like 2 guys on the weak side. It was almost like a man up play. It's almost like the Duke man up. And they, even after they did the lock off, they did it, which I thought was hilarious. And then the guy that benefited from that, Brant Pittman, 6 goals, yeah. Strong lefty, just like ducking under checks and firing balls to the far pipe. Dennison was really fun to watch here, and I think Washington Lee 0-2, like, they have a lot of talent. I just think they need to maybe restructure and like slow it down a little bit.
Yeah,
and
just
I think
focus.
they'll play much better.
Yeah, and just focus for, you know, a week or two on figuring out exactly who your guys are and just developing continuity and chemistry within those guys. I feel like they're playing so many guys that right now you can't get a good feel, and they can't get into a rhythm, you know?
Yeah, it's tough.
Absolutely.
Generals go to 0-2. They're in desperate need of a big win before, you know, conference play is still a few weeks away, but definitely want to get on the winning side of a few of these. Moving on, RIT 17, Ohio Wesleyan 4. Kyle, why don't you start us off?
I mean,
let's keep this one short.
I guess
there's not a lot to talk about.
Yeah, the good news is Quinn Commandant back in action, as predicted. Looked good scoring and distributing the ball. Maybe not in the same place he was before he was injured, but I think he's just a weapon. And the other thing I took away from here is Walker Hare is so good.
Yeah.
Just makes saves he's supposed to. Adds a few on top of that. Just so fundamental, so classy as a goalkeeper. He's like what you want out of your goalkeeper.
Totally agree. And then at the faceoff, they go 19 of 21 with Nick Montemurano, and he picked up 16 ground balls. So, like, when as Ohio Wesleyan, if you're going to face off at 4 of 25, you're going to clear 19 of 31, and you're going to give up 17 goals, you're putting a real bottleneck on the number of possessions that you're actually going to be able to have. You can't win games like that.
I agree.
Moving on. Illinois Wesleyan 11, Rhodes 15. Kyle, what do you think of this one? We talked about this one as being like an exciting one, high scoring teams that are we're not as familiar with. Kind of have any quick thoughts?
I will say the first 10 minutes of this game had 10 turnovers, or first 5 minutes had 10 turnovers, and I was having an anxiety attack the whole time. I was like, no, why are you keep doing that? Because Illinois Wesleyan lures you into playing that up and down style. Like you said, kind of Stevenson plays up and down. No, man, at least they sub. at least they pause to sub. Illinois Wesleyan does not care. They are attacking with poles, goalies, anyone that's around. They grab people from the crowd and throw them on the field. Like, this team does not stop for anything. They go right at the goal. Rhodes, they actually lured Rhodes into that kind of style, but Rhodes kind of got the better of it. They drew a bunch of penalties. They got some man-up goals, and they took control of the game in the second half and ended up pulling it out. Matt Perez with 5 goals and 2 assists to lead them. But it was fun as like a player to watch. Like if you remember, like you, if you're a player, you want to go play in a system like that, cause it looks fun. But like my coach brain was like short circuiting the entire time I was watching. It was not good, but it was good.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? It was just a perfect dichotomy of like fast lacrosse versus like smart lacrosse.
Yeah, and that was the second half of a two-game weekend for Rhodes too. Like on the fan picks, I actually picked Illinois Wesleyan. I thought Rhodes was the better team, but with it being the second game of the weekend, I wasn't sure what A, type of scout they would have or time to prepare, or B, if they were going to, you know, have the legs fall off of a close game. So I ended up getting that one wrong, but you know, props to him for pulling out a win in the second game of doubleheader on the weekend.
Yeah, Illinois Wesleyan plays Ohio Wesleyan next weekend, which I think could be a really interesting game. I think could be a really big program, you know, historic win for Illinois Wesleyan, getting a win if they can pull it out over OU next week. So we'll stay down into that as well. Another quick one I want to hit on, two more. Elizabethtown 13, Coast Guard 8. Last year, I believe Coast Guard won this game 10-1. Dan, what do you got?
Yeah, so I got to catch this game. I watched it in its entirety. And the difference maker in this game is Elizabethtown's goalie, Tom Mahoney. He makes 16 saves, and probably 8 of them, maybe even more, are off of either feeds inside or skips to the backside for step downs where he has to turn, find the ball, and make a really good save. And he did it all game. Like Coast Guard, this isn't a game that they go home and they have to circle the wagons. Honestly, they'd be better off going home and like getting a bucket of balls and just going outside and shooting for an hour. You know, like they're going to be fine. They just didn't capitalize on some of the shots, and a large part of that was Tom Mahoney. So props to him, helping his team out big time. And then Micah Blue logged at least 3 unassisted goals, I think 5 in the game. So, you know, props to him.
Kyle, you love Coast Guard.
I do. And I also know that they graduated a ton of kids from last year's team. So I wasn't super surprised. I still picked them. And I am upset they're in the same conference as Clark. So I like them, but at the same time, I am wary of them. They're like my friend that like gets lost when we go out. You know, I'm like, what's up, man? Hey, great beginning of the night. And then like, where'd he go? I don't know. You know, you're still going to put in some effort to look for him, but, you know, still a little hard to find.
I love that.
But Dan's totally right. They're going to be fine. And the thing about that program is like they've done such a good job of building it and bringing people in and cycling through and giving opportunities to younger players as well, that now they have like this kind of pipeline of recruits coming in. And it's a service academy. You know, there's no shortage of people that actually want to go there and play lacrosse. And now that the team is good, they're only going to get better.
Yeah, I love it. And just Elizabethtown, what Coach Brzezinski's been able to do there over the last two or three years, winning, you know, either two or three straight conference championships, an amazing job there. He's got to continue to be talked about as one of the up-and-coming, most exciting, you know, coaches in Division III. Got to make sure to check out the Blue Jays when you get a chance. Last game I want to recap, possibly the game of the weekend. Dan, I know you had a lot of eyes on this in our text back and forth. You were really excited about this one. And I was like, yeah, I'm not watching. So you can fill me in on Wednesday. But RPI 17, your boy Coach Hoffmeister, Scranton 16. What do you got?
This game was a blast to watch. Similar to what you were saying with Illinois Wesleyan and Rhodes, Kyle, this game was back and forth. It had runs. It had 10-man rides. It had transition goals. It had like crazy spectacular efforts where we're just going one-on-one. I don't care if I get slid to. I'm scoring for my team right now. Like, it was awesome. It had me jumping up off the couch a couple times. Gosh, it was exciting. It was really fun to watch. Nicholas Colucci for RPI and Owen Putman, like, offensively, they are awesome. They're both just really, really skilled, really slick, really smart. Nicholas Colucci had what you earlier deemed a Petrov hat trick with 3-3, and he was really good. And then a lot of bright points for Scranton, but the one I'll list here is Colin Purdy, their faceoff guy. He goes 16 of 35, which obviously you know you want to get to be at least above 50% at the faceoff X. But if you pick up 7 ground balls, you have 2 goals, you have an assist, and you play defense when you're asked to, like, What more can you do for your team? And he did a really good job. I'm sure that the coaching staff was pleased with him.
Another one worth mentioning, CNU 15, Washington College 6. It's a good segue into a game that'll be played tonight. So we'll talk about the Wednesday game tonight, and then there's a handful of them. So make sure you're checking out all the scores, the D3 scoreboard. Our guy Patrick McEwen has that thing rocking and rolling. All the live stats are going for D3 this past weekend. You can go on to telecross.com and get all the box scores for all the games. So make sure you're checking that out. So let's talk Wednesday tonight, CNU Roanoke. Worth mentioning in that I feel like this is the game every year where everyone knows Roanoke is, they're good, they're legit, they're a fringe top 20 team if they're not in the top 20. CNU, this game every year is always on a Wednesday, I feel like, and this is always a game where it's like, oh, CNU goes on a roll after this game, right? They feel like they should be in the ODAC, but they're not. They're in the, CAC, Dan, is that right? With York, being out in Virginia Beach. What Coach Thompson has done there is amazing. They have a million freshmen on the team, but this was a game last year where CNU won, it was something weird with the faceoffs, right? Like, Roanoke either won every clamp, but then CNU won every ground ball. They double pulled the faceoff. That's what it was. They double pulled the faceoff, won a million ground balls, had a million cost turnovers. This is kind of the game every year that I feel like it's like, oh, here goes CNU. They're getting ready to go. Dan, what do you have on this?
Yes. One? So what you're alluding to, last year CNU's faceoff guy got hurt. They didn't really have one at
That's
all.
Right.
And what they did was they put Phoenix Hines, their LSM, on the pace and would just let you pick it up and then basically shut and let him go to town trying to take the ball away. And he was at the top of the calls turnovers in the country because they were doing it that way. And I guess it was pretty effective in that game last year. But this year they have a freshman starting at the X, so they're going to be able to rely a little bit more on a true faceoff guy. And then that's in the back pocket for when they get him into a pinch because he's back. So the faceoff X, they're probably going to be better. They still have that option if they need it. And then, like you said, they're playing a ton of freshmen, a ton of young guys getting time. And, you know, they look really good. They're playing with a ton of energy. They're excited. They play really hard. Kyle mentioned riding. If you like riding, check out CNU. They ride like crazy. They try and force the ball out and push transition out of it. And so if Roanoke can handle that, they'll be a little bit better. Last year they did not. And then they've graduated a decent amount of guys from that team last year that were kind of underachieved. So this game will be interesting. I think CNU will kind of have its way, though.
It's funny you mentioned riding.
Yeah, the issue with Roanoke last year, I believe, was that they had a very low team shooting percentage, and they just needed to kind of like improve that. Like, they had the number of shots, just the number of shots that went in was like extraordinarily low, if I recall. So, I mean, hopefully they can, you know, just sometimes it's just like you said, get a bucket of balls and shoot for an hour. And you just feel a lot better. Maybe if Roanoke can kind of rediscover that with kind of a new crew there, they can be dangerous. I mean, I know I've made jokes about Roanoke in the past on the podcast, but I feel like if you've got good coaching, all you need is kind of good talent, and then you just ascend. So, and it can happen very quickly, especially at a school like that.
Yeah, Coach Pilot has been there a long time. One of the, you know, most legendary coaches in D3. Feel like they haven't had the juice they've had the last 3 or 4 years, you know, going back to, like, certainly when I was playing against them, you know, my first 2 years we didn't beat them, and then, you know, we ended up knocking them out of the NCAA tournament my senior year. But I feel like they haven't had that kind of energy around the program the past few years. Dan, you mentioned riding for CNU. I think, like, right before we started recording this, I saw a tweet from Mikey Thompson being like, there's nothing I love more than a riding attackman, and certainly exemplified in, like, the group he has going on this year. So I think it's going to be going. I agree. Fan picks, I'm going with CNU. You guys can go on to all the audience listening right now. You guys can go on to InsideLacrosse.com and pick games. All you got to do is log in, pick a game. You can see who Kyle, Dan, our pretty faces will be up there popping up. Mike Gilbert, our IT guy here, another York alum, a lot of Spartans in the house. There's always picking games. There's a lot of D3 chatter going on. So make sure you're checking that out as well. Let's move forward to this weekend. We have four games we want to talk about. Let's start with the biggest one, I think. Salisbury-Gettysburg, a game every year that you have to have circled on your calendar. Last year, I think this was a 10-10 game. I believe Salisbury won 11-10 in overtime. There was like an insane goal. I remember we had an amazing clip on Instagram and Twitter last year. Kinnear, I think, might have been there, actually. But it was an awesome game. Gettysburg beat Messiah last week 16-10. Getting rolling. They lose a few guys at graduation. Mitch Wyckoff, still on the defensive end, is still kind of that guy for them. A perennial national defender of the year candidate.
Beast.
Yeah, he's a monster. And you know what you're going to get from Salisbury. They're going to win a ton of faceoffs with the Melanfi kid. Dan, how do you see this one short of shaking out?
Yeah, it'll be really fun to watch. If they, like you said, if they can narrow the gap at the faceoff X and then handle some of that pressure from Salisbury, they'll be in good shape. They play enough guys on offense that are dynamic and can get a step that it's not a game where Salisbury defensively is going to be able to just completely hold matchups and not show at all. Freshman Kyle Howard for Gettysburg logged, like, I think he was 4-3 in his first game, and he's proving to be able to beat a short stick and score, or beat a short stick and make you pay. And then they have a transfer from Towson, Spencer Knife, who came in, and again, he can do the same thing. He likes working from those low angles and you know, working from X to try and get the dangerous spots on the field, and then he can bail and be a feeder. And Michael McCormick has a very, very similar game. So them working in tandem as a midfield is going to be really good. I think they're going to be able to generate some slides and kind of make Salisbury have to at least help on defense. But like you said, narrowing the faceoff gap is going to be, you know, a really, really tall task.
Gettysburg also plays Goucher tonight in Towson up near us. So they'll have another one on their belt. They should be 2-0 heading into this game on Saturday. I feel like Brian Colon has been there forever. Yeah. He's kind of their guy with Jack Harvey moving on, some of those other offensive pieces moving on.
Yeah. And that Goucher game, they're going to have to figure out what they want to do in the goal. They didn't get the best performance. They didn't get the performance that I think that they would have been hoping for from the returning starter from last year.
Scott McMillan.
He's kind of stoked, kid. Yeah, McMillan. He came in. He started since the day he'd been there, but did not have a great showing in game one, and ends up getting pulled. So we'll have to see what they decide to do there, whether they go with the backup against Goucher or whether it was just, you know, a fluke incident and you can pull him. He learns from it, gets better. Or, you know, it'll be interesting. We'll have to see.
Kyle, any thoughts on this one before we move on?
You mentioned Mitch Wyckoff. One of the things that I also specialize in is pro kind of evaluation and analysis.
Oh, yeah.
And last year, like, I have coaches that are like, I know you watch a lot of D3. Can anyone play pro? And last year, I was just like, Nate Usage.
Yep. Big listener of the D3 podcast.
I recommended him, and he got protected by a team just based on that. So if I'm going to do that this year, it's going to be Mitch Wyckoff.
Totally agree.
Like, that's a guy I watch. That's a guy I want. That's a guy that if he kind of finishes the season healthy, that's really the key, I think, because the amount of games you play and then just kind of trying to roll into a pro training camp after, you know, a grueling schedule of, like, conference, playoffs. I mean, D1 players have that too, but a lot of the time they have better amenities, shall we say, to recover. So I think that, you know, the D3 guys have a little bit of a harder time to make that transition. But if I'm recommending a guy, you know, not sight unseen, but a guy I've seen for a while, I would say, like, watch Mitch Wyckoff and see if you like him. That's a kind of guy that I would get behind in terms of, like, sheer talent, physicality, and everything you need at the next level.
Yeah, and they use him everywhere. You know, they put him on the wings of faceoffs. They put him on the best attackman. They put him in, make him guard the best cover. And gosh, he's effective in all different stages. He had 9 goals last year. He had 1,000 ground balls. He had 9 ground balls in their first game against Messiah. He's a beast.
Moving on, Lynchburg, Cabrini. We've talked at length, you know, first couple podcasts here about Lynchburg, so you know we're gonna get out of them. Kevin Rogers, Trammell Robinson on offense, gonna have to muck it up the faceoff X. Tyler Gallagher, Noah Bedwell in goal. Cabrini, haven't really talked about him that much. The reigning national champs, obviously they lose Jordan Krug, kind of a, you know, the guy, right? 55, the guy who kind of put the team on the back, gets him to a national championship. They played Haverford already last weekend, a 14-2 win, kind of a down the street rival. Some of those similar names, though, right? You lose Krug, you still have Jake Klein, you have Tyler Kostak. You have some of these guys kind of you're used to seeing. But I know there's another guy, Dan, you and I were talking a little bit pre-podcast, Cole Wesner, you have a little bit of info on that you think could be a heavy hitter for the Cavaliers this season.
Yeah, so there was, you know, obviously a lot of hype and a lot of, you know, speculation as to whether they were going to be able to reload or if they were going to be in a rebuilding year. And, gosh, I mean, they are so dynamic on the offensive side of the ball, even without Krug. And even without this Cole Wesner kid who comes in and starts as a freshman, he was obviously, you know, previously committed to Penn State and is now, you know, holding down the left wing for Cabrini. He's very, very slick, very talented, can shoot the ball. And so at attack, they're working with him, Laparo, and then the other returner, Kyle Tucker, who is a, you know, really, really dangerous off-ball guy. And so that actually put Klein in the midfield, who started every game at attack last year. And so he deserves a pull, absolutely. And then Kostak running on that line with him, he absolutely deserves a pull. And then Mike Garzbeck is the other guy that runs with them, and he's dynamic. So, like, they are going to be tough to guard. You have to double pull him. You have to double pull him and put a short stick on Kyle Tucker. But they know that too, you know? So they're going to have a plan for it. But gosh, I mean, they are dynamic on that side of the ball. Those top 6 guys are really, really going to be able to create some offense and put some defenses in some really, really precarious situations.
This game is in Radnor up in Philly. I don't believe the Hornets have won in Radnor in the last 4 years. They do definitely do a home and away, right, where Cabrini travels to Lynchburg and vice versa. I don't recall the last time Lynchburg won at Cabrini. It's probably going back 4 or 5 years, 2 or 3 times playing up in Radnor. So see how that plays into it. It's always been an exciting game. There's been a couple overtime games, definitely back and forth. Cabrini's one of those other really cool places to play. Like, it's tucked away in kind of that, like, Berwyn, Haverford area in Philly, and there's, like, a million schools over there, but they have this, like, little kind of path you go down, and just the field is, like, it's, like, just a field. It's pretty cool. It's kind of like you walk out and you're just there. Crowd's always into it, so I think that'll be a good one. Definitely worth catching this weekend. Let's move on to another one. We have 2 more. York Stevenson, obviously Dan, our Spartan alum, can talk forever about York. We already talked a little bit about Stevenson. The way I break this down in the simplest way is York, unbelievably disciplined, Coach Childs. You know what you're getting with a Coach Childs team week in and week out. Stevenson, we talk about the lack of discipline a little bit. Before we let Dan go, Kyle, do you have any thoughts on York Stevenson? I'd love to get the northern thoughts before we let Dan go all Spartan on us.
Yeah, I think a guy we didn't talk about for Stevenson was Mark Paust. in net. If I'm going to give a scout, which, like, I probably shouldn't do on a podcast, but, like, I kind of don't care, low and away. Like, he's so good stick side. Do not shoot on that dude's stick side. And I know you say that about, like, everybody says that about everybody's – everybody's says that about every goalie. But Paus was so good against Ursinus, again, on those, like, near side pipe shots. But far and away, I think he got screened a lot too, and that defense is still kind of figuring stuff out. So I would watch for that. But again, you know, on the other side of that, you got Jacob Tatum just doing crazy stuff for your team. Ethan Christensen putting up points, Will Smith as well. So, you know, I think if you're looking at it from York's perspective, I think York doesn't want a repeat performance of what happened against WNL. And they want to get up and out early and kind of force Stevenson to try to make more crazy plays to get back in the game, even though they do that anyway. But I think the organization between those two teams is so vastly different on the spectrum that it's almost a game where anything can happen, because if York has a down game, like, Stevenson will, like, run the whole time, and maybe a lot of those shots drop and York is kind of clawing their way back in. I don't think York is a team that likes to claw back. I know they can and they're good at it, but I think they're a team that likes to be up, if that makes any sense. Dan, what do you think of that kind of assessment?
Oh, I definitely agree. Stevenson obviously has some pieces that are super dynamic, and if they get going, like you said, anything can happen. And sometimes Stevenson just gets into those grooves where they're hot and they're hitting behind the backs from 10 yards off of skip passes that just absolutely, like, pin the top corner. I've been on the other side of it before. It's very frustrating, you know. They just get into that zone and there's no stopping them. But at the same time, if York can just continue to be the more disciplined team, continue to stay composed and not let those types of runs influence their emotional state, then they should be just fine, you know, being the more disciplined team and you know, sticking to their principles.
One thing I want to note, you know, don't want to look ahead past Stevenson for this game for York, but first, like, 9 games of York's schedule, WNL, Eastern, they took care of last week, 11-3. Stevenson, Lynchburg, Gettysburg, Lycoming, Ohio Wesleyan, RIT, Cabrini. What? That is, like, 7 of those 9 games are, like, 7 top 15 teams right now.
Got to play the best to be the best.
I love it. Just worth noting, as we head into our last game, two teams we really have not talked about almost at all, but are teams that are always in that conversation for a top 20. You know, we mentioned Nate Usage earlier from Dickinson, Kyle. But Dickens, Stevens Tech this weekend, like we said, two teams are not as on the radar this season so far. Still kind of yet to get into a big, meaningful game. Either you guys have any thoughts on this one?
So Dickinson was one of those teams that coming into the year I was kind of hesitant about, and then they came out and just took care of business against St. Mary's. Dickinson lost a lot from last year. They lost 2 assistant coaches. They lost both of their faceoff guys. They lost Usage. They lost a ton. They lost guys on offense, defense, and everywhere in between, and on the coaching staff. And came out and took care of business. Seemed to be ready to go against St. Mary's. This will be a much better test, obviously, but it'll be exciting to watch.
They played St. Mary's, 115-8. You have 2 freshmen with a ton of points right now. Skylar Schluter, attackman from Summit, New Jersey. 1 goal, 4 assists. Griffin Moore, a freshman from Richfield, Connecticut, 4 goals. Then you have Ben Levin, a senior, with 5 goals. So when you can get the little mix early, those guys getting a game. St. Mary's is a good team. Getting a good game, a little confidence under their belt early. I expect those guys continue to get better throughout the season. And like you said, Dan, this young Dickinson team will continue to grow. I feel like we've hit on a lot of games. We threw a lot at you today. So we'll continue to rock with the D3 coverage. It's an awesome, awesome weekend. Make sure you're watching games, live streams, everything on InsideLacrosse.com. We'll have as much live stats as we possibly can throughout the season. Again, you can follow Dan Kaplan at dkaplan46.
Boom.
I'm going to take that off your plate because I know you struggled to remember it last time. Kyle, you want to hit us with your social info?
You can hit me at the Kyle Devitt, and don't sleep on RIT Bates. It's a great game this weekend.
I love it. We can't forget about the North. Don't worry. We're going to get into the North with the NESCAC guys starting a little bit later. We're going to start to make sure we get a lot of that. We'll get Stockman involved, and we'll make Kyle kind of kind of do his thing. So you can find me at JoshD85 on Twitter. We'll get this thing out as soon as we can. Appreciate you guys listening. Hope you have a great week.